Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Faking Movies, episode 259. That's right. Half 2 plus half plus 4. That equals 259.
It's Cockney Christ. Rhyming math, I guess. Yeah. You psycho.
I do like the idea of Cockney rhyming math.
That's a good term.
Oi, teacher! I ain't no good with your numbers and such. I got Cockney rhyming math.
You're never right. Not even once are you right, but you're also never wrong, technically.
I had to break Seth out of whatever, like,
that's true,
making faces spiral he was stuck in. So
yeah. Just you gotta shake the keys like a baby.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's
he flew through the jet wash, you know? It's just how Goose died. Yeah. So. So anyway, this is 259. Check out Twitter, I guess. Faking Movies. Marielle works very hard.
Sure.
I say I guess because you all know. You all know.
You know.
Elon's getting weird again. And as we've said it before, as our gap widens with current day on the release of the episodes, everything's weird. Who knows?
Yeah, what are we up to now? We've got like a 2 month.
Oh, we're 2.5, almost 3 now months.
Yeah. This is great. There's a good chance. Well, I don't know about good chance. There's a possibility one of us will be dead by the time this comes out.
Whoa! And you said it in such a happy tone.
We don't even know.
Yeah.
We won't. And we don't, like, we'll never know.
That's true. Yeah, it's true.
And it's like Seth and Zach start up the next episode, and it's like, guys, Lee diarrheaed himself to death. I don't know. It's like, there's nothing really to say.
He got the butt poisoning again.
If we don't all outlive Twitter, it will be a true shame. Like, that is the bar now, currently.
Oof. Speaking of weird Twitter-based hate groups, so, like...
Which one? There's so many.
I know. I was thinking about this last week when we were originally going to record, and I'm just going to bring it up anyway because it made me giggle, and I, like, specifically didn't say it in our group chat because of, like, I'm going to bring this up on the episode because it's relevant to the day we're recording, and, like, I'm going to force it through. So
it's much better that you just did that preamble.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The former president, like, he got arraigned last week. Is that what happened? Yeah. I was thinking, like, I thought just in general, but like specifically to him, how many times do you think he's been a Christmas caroled and has it ever stuck like for any measurable amount of time?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And like extend that out to any billionaire. Like, you mean who's the most likely billionaire to A, have been Christmas caroled, and B, actually change their ways?
You mean by an actual ghost or like a corporeal human?
No, by like people being like, we've tried everything else.
Oh, I assume that's every day for our former president. Like, has to be. Every single day. Where they're like, man, I don't know. Like, I'm on your side and I don't even fucking like you. Like, can we just steer this ship in any other direction?
Yeah, I guess this is me saying... when I do inevitably die of butt poisoning, before I go, in my final night on this planet, while I'm in a fever based just shit spray coming out of me, will you guys Christmas carol me?
Just to give me yeah, 100%.
We have to write the script for it now, presumably.
That's okay. Oh, yeah. I already wrote one. There's like a couple years ago that Lee was like on my nerves, and I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna make you stop singing Steely Dan." So like we can just put in, I don't know. How dare you get butt poisoning?
Yeah, it's like it's like pre-write obituaries for notable people. It's like
right.
This, if you don't have a dossier of pre-planned Christmas carolings for your friends,
yeah,
yeah,
I guess, mean, like, if you had to improv, I mean, this is a PSA. Dome, it wouldn't be that hard.
It's a PSA for all the listeners. Pre-plan your Christmas caroling today.
Yeah. You don't want to flub it in the moment. That's just, ugh.
Yeah.
You don't want to get that horrible call. Obviously, no one wants to get that horrible call that a friend of yours is in the throes of fatal butt poisoning.
That's true.
But we all will someday. It's going to, it comes for us all.
It does.
You don't want to be caught unaware. Without a Christmas caroling script.
Or
hi,
with,
I'm Lee Fartnoise for Christmas Carol Scripts Incorporated, where you, for a small fee, we will provide you with scripts for Christmas caroling your friends who are dying of fatal butt poisoning. You just have to plug in the names. You know, it's
and for a nominal fee, we'll even act it out for you. If you need one of us to pretend to be a former business partner. And you know, I guess one-legged child.
Did he have one leg, or was he just had a limp?
All right, if for an exorbitant fee, if you want to
okay, all right, I see where this is going.
if you want to Kathy Bates us,
We'll toss that in. What's the number for that fee? You know, it's high, and it's also like it changes based on how many times it's happened and when it's most recently happened.
It's an asymptotic decay. After the first one, it's like, you know, $10,000 or whatever, probably.
I don't know. I feel like after the first one, it's like, you know how much physical therapy I went through to get over that? This is double now. Like,
oh, you're assuming you'd go through physical therapy? I would just, like, never walk again. That's so much easier. Okay, yeah. Like,
Oh,
but that first one... That first one's like,
that's a doozy.
I don't know. Yeah. That also depends on the day. It could sway pretty widely.
Which ghost of would each or spirit of would each of us be? I know what I think we would all be, and I can go first. Zach is not to dox the tallest of us, and he definitely is the most jolly shaped of us. So I think he would be a perfect ghost of Christmas present.
Yeah.
All right.
Just a big party dude who wants to show you that, like, oh, look how much fun everyone has when you're not around, you dick. Like,
that does feel like my vibe generally. Like, stop harshing the buzz.
I grew up in a Jewish household, so I didn't read this because it was Christmas related. Did I ever feel like watching the movies because they seemed really boring to me.
But you're a Muppet guy. You should watch the Muppet version.
But man, I fucking hate A Christmas Carol because it was jammed down my throat every living second of my youth, and so I just never participated. So I don't know which would I be. Would I be the past? Would I be the future?
I think you're yet to come because you're enigmatic and creepy.
Yeah, that's true. I am. Yeah. That's true.
And I'm a little wispy ghost girl, so like I'm clearly the past.
Yeah.
And I love nostalgia.
I like Seth for the future because he could come up with like truly insane wild shit for like, here's what could have been. You would have been struck by lightning and morphed into a pterodactyl and flown into the sun.
Whoa,
now you're not gonna do
shit.
That. So fucking
good job,
about
dummy.
How cool that would have been. You would have been the first pterodactyl or pterosaur astronaut.
Oh, it would be very pedantic too. That's true.
Here's the thing though, and now
I would have been a pterodactyl. Well, technically.
Now I'm realizing that neither
It's like you're a dimetrodon. Like not a dimetrodon, excuse me. Dimorphodon. I meant dimorphodon.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
I'm now realizing that neither Seth nor I could ever be the ghost of Christmas is yet to come because the ghost of Christmas yet to come does not speak. I am realizing that now. There's no possible way either of us could ever pull that off. So
that's a
tough
one.
I could wear a ghost face mask and then have a bunch of diagrams.
Yes.
What is ghost face if not a modern mime, honestly?
He does point a lot. That is true. And retracted.
I want to talk, but
we're going to need to put like a gag on you to make sure.
So it's going to be like pointing at a diagram.
a lot of weird mouth sounds.
Now you're hearing this now, listener. For an absorbent fee, Seth will create crazy diagrams about what their future could be.
Mm-hmm.
Or could it be? This hasn't come to pass yet, has it? This may not come to pass. I could change. You know, but like Seth's
and then
not
you
be like
change
that.
Into a really cool crested dinosaur of some nature, maybe exactly. A Parasaurolophus.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure. Nobody ever thought about that.
Seth's just gonna bury them in a pile of zoo books, dinosaur books.
I'm already dying. This is redundant. What are we doing?
What's happening? Am I supposed to change? How can I change?
An
I'm
open
shitting
grave,
myself to death.
An
cholera.
Open grave
like, what's
filled
on?
with zoo books. Yeah.
Yeah. You shit up all my rare zoo books. These were worth money.
Did you all have the dinosaur ones growing up? I had all the dinosaur ones, and it came with every month had a piece of a dinosaur skeleton, and you got to build the T-Rex.
Oh, shit. I don't remember that part. I might have got mine secondhand.
I have actual dinosaur bones over there. Like, what are you talking about?
Really?
This guy.
Yeah. Over on the shelf. I've got the upper femur of a coelophysis.
Hey, Seth?
Yeah?
And never once have you offered to let me put that in my mouth?
Wait. Have you had any of my meteorites in your mouth?
Of course. I've had my own meteorite in my mouth.
Well, yeah, but I have
sometimes I just put it in my mouth if I'm feeling stressed out.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. I it's a little big to jam in your
mouth. Well, I'll lick it, you know.
You have such a petite mouth. I
don't know about that.
I didn't think about that, but I mean, I have lots of, like, bone fragments and shit over there.
Obviously, I want to lick them. Like, they're not rocks, but they're not rocks.
Do you want a mastodon
technically
tooth?
Rocks,
I could give you a mastodon tooth.
You just give it to me? Yeah.
Yeah, I probably have an extra one around here somewhere.
I've got a missing tooth. I'll
I was
going
to say, just take it to the dentist and just please.
Excuse me, sir.
I need to put this mastodon tooth in.
Oh boy, I'm so glad we're having a good time because the movie this week is not.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that my movie is gonna do much for you.
I don't think you're to blame here. This is a me thing again.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see.
It's yet again Lee picks a movie and doesn't think about, not even that far into the future, a good 2 weeks into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Just how that affects everyone's life.
Yeah. Oh, suddenly the Ghost of Christmas Present's understanding what's going to happen in the future for me, you know?
Fancy that. Wait, were you Tom Sawyering me this whole time? God damn it.
Oh shit!
Paint my fence.
We have to go. We have to both Tom Sawyer and Christmas Carol Lee.
Yeah, I think you do.
Man,
it's a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Listen.
The fee will be exorbitant. Like it's worth it.
Oh yeah. 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 That's true.
Dear listener.
I guess.
Speaking of exorbitant things, I was walking around today, still stalling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does a Vespa cost?
It depends.
The new ones are expensive, and the old shitty ones are more expensive.
Yeah. Vintage boys.
It's like,
am I
a Vespa person? A lot of Vespas around here.
I mean, they
make sense
because
it's kind of flat.
Yeah.
It's very flat.
As a means of conveyance, they are among the worst. It's really kind of a conversation piece and like a. You know, it makes you look like a certain kind of person. I don't think it's the kind of person you want to look like.
I kind of like a Piaggio scooter. Like it's fine.
I'd sooner ride a bicycle though. I think they just
use my legs. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, they make electric
like
ones
a
now,
peasant.
Yeah. No, they're real shitty.
Oh, I bet you expect me to scythe my own wheat.
See, that just looks fun, honestly.
It is kind of fun.
Zach just wants us to be serfs. That's what he's saying.
I'm fine with being a serf in his fiefdom.
I've been trying to cultivate a motorcycle gang for so long, and you know.
Then buy me one, Zach. I've asked you to do that before, and you were like, "Yeah, okay, I'll do it."
That's true. Mm-hmm. No, because I know you. You just like put it in your living room for a week, and then like put it out in the garage. It would just rot away, and I wouldn't
you
get
teach
my motorcycle
me how to
again,
drive
so.
It, Dad. I mean, Zach.
You have
I mean,
many, many times said, "I don't think I'm a motorcycle person," and then immediately asked me for a motorcycle.
I've only ridden on one once.
There are some Italian automatic transmission motorcycles.
Honda makes like kind of contemporary ones.
They make a couple, but there was a really nice one actually from Piaggio. That was like kind of sport bike shaped.
Listen, Lee knows how to drive a manual. I taught him in my race car that one time.
There's video evidence of how good I was at it.
As I hear the teeth chip off of your gears.
Yeah, it's not the ugliest sound I've ever heard that car make, honestly.
It's a recurring thing with me, because that's what happened to my stand mixer. I pushed it too hard and I just destroyed all the gears and I had to replace them all.
What the fuck?
But did we learn anything? No, we did not.
Yeah, I learned how to fix my stand mixer, and that's true. Pretty affordable to do so.
Wait, did you have a brake neck?
No. I have a bolt lift.
Oh, man. A
lift, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Now, did you go from plastic to metal? Because I hear that's the real upgrade.
I changed out everything. I left the fail-safe one as plastic, and I changed everything else to metal.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. That is, yes, chef's kiss. Great job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the hardest part was finding food-grade grease in an amount that wasn't a 5-gallon container.
Mm-hmm.
I got some food grade grease for you.
Hey, right here. I hear that grease is the word. Speaking of which, there's a new grease show on Paramount Plus. It's called The Rise of the Pink Ladies, and I watched most of the first episode.
That doesn't sound fun.
Is it all teens that you don't recognize?
I mean, I don't know who any of the people are. Like, they're not. Okay. I know who's. So Miss McGee, the principal from the original, is a character, and I recognize the actress playing her. But that's it.
Sure. I guess what I'm saying is most shows now, where I'm like, usually like, oh, that person's in it, maybe I'll watch it. And now all the new shows are like, these people are children. I don't. Are they Instagram famous? Maybe. I don't. Yeah.
Well, like the main girl is definitely a musical theater person. But I have no idea how old she is, and like, I feel like the idea of looking that up at my age is a gross thing to do. Like, so regardless of my motivation,
just look what else they're in.
No, that's what I did. I just wanted to know if they were already famous. I avoided the like, how old is this person conversation.
Oh, okay. So you're not on a particular watch list.
Google usually volunteers that info, I think, to head this problem off at the pass sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love typing in a person's name into Google, and the first thing that comes up is height, and the second one that comes up is feet, and then the next one that comes up is wife, always. Yeah. It's always in that order.
Or age. Yeah, it's all the oof and doofus. Yeah. Yeah.
Why doesn't it come up favorite dinosaur?
I don't know. I guess maybe we have to the lefty liberal media to blame for not asking the hard hitting questions about dinosaurs.
Or it's a numbers game, Seth. If you get a whole botnet going and just request that a bunch, then it will start.
I'm just gonna
be like
Zach fart noise, favorite dinosaur.
Sure.
Lee fart noise, favorite dinosaur. I can't think of anybody else famous, so
I don't know if I have a favorite dinosaur.
You named two people you're staring at and no one famous.
Karl Marx.
Zero suit
favorite dinosaur. Sam Neill, favorite dinosaur. Fraser Crane, favorite dinosaur.
What if Sam Neill didn't believe in dinosaurs? What if we found that out?
That would
like,
bum me out so
I think
hard.
Sam's a pretty good dude.
He is.
He just likes gross grapes and shit, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you don't have a favorite dinosaur, Lee? Ugh.
I don't think so.
Man.
There's just so many to choose from, and I don't know the names of any of them confidently enough for you to not make fun of me right now.
Oh,
so,
I was gonna make so Ain't much fun of you. Truth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I kind of like the idea, the trike, you know. Oh, big stretch.
You mean any kind of ceratops
ceratops that
I just
maybe
like
exists?
I just like the look, you know.
Sure.
It's a good look.
You got to go with Land Before Time personalities, too. That was the real bitchy one. So
Sarah. Yeah.
Sarah
not
was
a kind of
the catty one. Yeah.
You know, I've never Land Before Timed.
No.
You know, that is only like an hour long. It's not even a movie.
Yeah.
Well, and I say also, that. There's 14 of them, but
yeah. I mean, did you watch that Jenny Nicholson?
I did. Yeah,
oh, it's so good.
You got it well enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jenny in her prime.
Yep. Yeah.
That was very early quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was back in the time when I was predicting that we'd be out in the world in a couple weeks because I assumed humanity would care about each other.
No. Oh, that's cute.
You learned to love the bum.
Yeah.
Speaking of, okay, so like, you know how when I went back to work during when, you know, quarantine was still going on for some people, and it completely destroyed my brain in terms of what scares me and does not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing I'd held on to was that before the pandemic happened, I went to see Hereditary and it terrified me so intensely that I couldn't watch it again. And I had nightmares for months, not every night or anything, but like every couple of weeks I'd have a nightmare about it and be like, oh, good, fuck. Well, I watched again this afternoon. It's not as scary as I remember. It's still pretty upsetting. It's not as scary as I remember.
I don't think it has quite the... It's so jarring and abrupt the first time, I think.
Yeah, But
I got to appreciate it for, like, literally the opening scene. Like, people say things in that... People say... Toni Collette says things at the funeral. Toni Collette says things at the grief council meeting.
Yeah.
And then there's a girl in the son's class talking about the book they're reading, and those literally three speeches are just the whole fucking movie. Like, just it's like, oh my god.
Spoiler alert to a minute and a half ago.
Whatever. It's from like 2017. Like you had a chance.
It's true. A lot of bad things have happened in the
fucking. Hey, do you remember? 3-hour epic comedy is about to come out. Like, you know, just I can't wait.
Well, I guess I'm faking a movie. If we want to get to there, or do you want to talk about other stuff first?
Yeah, I think we need to reset the tempo of this episode. Do you want to tell him why I said that, Seth?
No.
Make him sit in it.
That's faking a movie.
Does it smell like farts in here to anybody else? Because it does to me.
It's because that's faking a movie. That movie's called Tempo.
Right. Yes, I am indeed. Despite Lee's fart that we
Seth is currently playing under protest.
Swimming in. Okay, so yes, I am faking a movie called Tempo. The acting personae you gave me were Melanie Griffith, Rachel Lee Cook, Malcolm McDonald. Is he a sir? I feel like he might be a sir.
Malcolm McDowell? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And Hugh Dancy, which I don't really know who that is. So
in a word, he's Dancy.
I didn't watch Hannibal.
Well, that's his main... That's, I think, his most notable thing.
Go ahead.
Oh, he and his friends used to run a blog. I only say used to because I think it's just on archive now. It's not active.
Yeah.
Where they would just take pictures of carpets in airports and post them.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
And one time he got stopped by TSA because they thought he was...
Oh, case of the joint.
Yeah.
Are you going to do a terrorism? No, but I can't explain what I am doing.
It does weird. Not appear, Seth, that Malcolm McDowell is...
Really? Well, that's fine.
Does being in Clockwork like immediately disqualify you or something? Is that unbecoming of a sir?
Honestly, that's not the worst explanation.
Yeah, but I
the
feel
Queen
like...
The Queen was kind of a prude, right?
Wait, isn't Sean Connery a sir?
He eventually became a sir, even though he was a very vocal Scottish independence person.
And also was in the movie Zardoz. So
that's true. He was Zardoz.
There was violence upon our... There was ultra violence upon our eyes in that movie.
I think he was a real life piece of shit, and the Queen was very clearly willing to look past that. But Malcolm McDowell seems like an okay real life person, and maybe just played a piece of shit that one time in a movie.
Yeah, that's
and the Queen doesn't know any better. So
hey, Seth, well, you, she's you know dead. What I just
remember how she died?
Yeah, because our viewership went down one.
I know,
Seth. Mm-hmm. You know what I just learned? The guy who plays Dr. Bashir in Deep Space Nine is Malcolm McDowell's nephew.
Oh, well, that's fun.
Yeah.
Something Siddig.
Yes.
What
Alexander
is
Siddig.
Alexander Siddig. Yeah. Yeah. He's an interesting guy. Anyway, I'm faking a movie this week. We could talk about Star Trek more if you want.
No,
oh, he was
no,
he
no,
was
no.
married to Nana Visitor.
He sure was. In fact, wow. In like there was a bunch of scenes where I think maybe they had a child together, where it was his child in the show, but it was actually O'Brien's child who got implanted into the character of Nana Visitor, and
it was played by their real child.
Briefly, yeah, but it was still a whole big mess, and then they got divorced like right then after, because I think Alexander Siddig maybe cheated on her.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Zach's eyes are about to bug out of his head. So this movie, Tempo.
My partner pointed out today that she thinks Seth, you and I might be the idea of the the platonic twins that are separated from one person. And I think we're not complimentary enough. We're just too much of the same version of chaotic energy.
Yeah. There's a lot of like whatever starts a tornado, and once it gets going, it can like really like rev itself into oblivion. Like it's that thing for sure.
So like the pressure differential and the potential energy differential with the
pterodactyl
electrons
and
the yeah.
Yep. All that.
Seth, you're turning my blue skies green.
Aww.
Oh.
Oh, you finally see the green sky.
Yeah, it was fun.
And yes, lived.
It is really fascinating to watch the sky turn green.
And terrifying. Fascinating is a word for it, I imagine.
I've never been that terrified by it because I like sort of know what it is. And
I was mostly just so annoyed at my cats for like making me corral them and stuff I didn't have time to be scared,
you know. Sure. I've not lived in a place with tornado since I've had cats, so I don't know what that would be like necessarily.
Frustrating.
That's just life with cats
generally. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Right,
Tempo.
Now, yes, Tempo.
God damn it.
my first idea was about like an office temp named O, but then I didn't do it.
It's a retelling of Othello, just like that other movie.
Kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My next one was
called O.
Yeah.
Sort of a theme of poverty. So TM in Russian means theme, and then po, poor, poorness.
Oh.
I don't know. It didn't really.
Oh,
anywhere.
Yeah.
Poe
Dameron, right.
Yeah, the next one was transmission electron microscopes of polonium. Because
how would you flesh that out? Yeah,
well, you know how TEM stands for, of course, transmission electron microscopes.
Everyone
actually
does,
did know that. Yep.
Yeah. and then PO is of
stands
course,
for Poe Dameron.
And also polonium, that thing that war criminal Vladimir Putin used to kill a bunch of journalists.
Sure enough,
tried to kill political rivals and fail.
Well,
regardless.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Why use a thing that's untraceable when you can use a thing that's incredibly traceable?
Incredibly traceable.
To inspire fear.
Well, literally, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's get into my real one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. This is going to be a mess, fellas, because I kind of was not in my right mind.
But
when
we're sitting in one, so let her rip.
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, Zachy. anyway. We opened on a montage of people like practicing various instruments, with maybe a person playing, like every person is playing the same piece with a different instrument. We sort of run the gamut from, you know, violins to guitar to piano to trumpet, you know, that sort of
thing. So it's a new Polyphonic Spree album is what I mean.
Basically, yeah.
Can I get a clarification? You're not saying that they're playing the part that corresponds to their instrument. They're all playing the same, like, set of notes.
Yes, precisely. Okay. And it's all sort of synced up, so you shift from a violin to a hurdy-gurdy.
It's like less of an orchestra and more of like a, I don't know, art piece around.
A mess around, if you will.
Yeah, essentially, like, everybody is playing the same piece of music at the same speed, at the same everything, and it just sort of syncs, cut into
pieces. We all played instruments in college. It's like when you happened upon some other people that might have played some complimentary instruments, and you sit down for 2 seconds, and then you realize, I've made a terrible mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, but it's, you know, it's in, like, single-second bits, shooting, like, jumping between shots of each of these, like, I don't know, 100 different people playing.
So, like, some sort of speaker would use this, like a PBS, there'd be a PBS, about, like, here's what this piece of music sounds like on this many different instruments. Wow. Right. Listen to, yeah.
Except yep. It's way faster than that, mm-hmm. But that's fine. And the montage ends with Malcolm McDowell, who is a conductor, finishing the piece to an uproar of applause from the audience, and he quickly, you know, turns and he bows, and, you know, gestures to his first chair concertmaster, you know, his first chair violin, etc. Then he wipes the sweat from his brow, and eventually, you know, marches off the stage. And he goes back to his dressing room, and it's, like, full of, like, instruments and sheet music, and they're all stacked high on tables and shelves, and he puts his head into his hands and utters, what am I doing? And, you know, he's idly playing on a glockenspiel then, you know, just a couple of little notes on a glockenspiel. Okay. Smash cut!
Oh, Jesus.
What? Oh, I mean, what, Zach?
I was going to say, this sounds like a documentary I saw this year called Tar.
You know, I never saw Tar.
Oh, you should see it. It's based on a true... I heard it was a documentary. It is. It was in the wrong category.
You know, if I had a job right now, I might pour my drink onto my computer out of anger. But, like, I'm not in... I don't have computer replacing extra money at the moment, so...
Fair. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, so smash cut to Rachel Lee Cook, and she is a guitarist and, you know, has just been kicked out of her college grunge pop punk band.
Called?
I don't know.
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know. Have you never seen Josie and the Pussycats 97 times? Like,
is that grunge?
Pop punk. Like,
Rachel Lee Cook plays a guitar. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah, and, like, they're like early 2000s punk aesthetic. Like, you know,
they're Avril Lavigne punk.
And the music was done by Letters to Cleo, so they're like 90s alt rock, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, anyway, so she's a guitarist, and she just got kicked out of Josie and the Pussycats after a particularly bad show, and I assume we, like, see it all. Like, we see the show, see it go poorly, see the fallout after, all of that jazz, and she, like, is, like, sitting back in her apartment sort of noodling about on her guitar, and it's the middle of the night. Smash cut to Hugh Dancy, and he's a Kenny G style multiple platinum album winning smooth jazz saxophonist.
Honestly, Zach, you've watched some of Hannibal, right?
Yep, just
his
enough.
Hair from Hannibal suits that.
Yeah, I think his general sort of his whole thing suits that. He's very sort of floaty and weird, and
he is floaty and weird. Yeah.
Well, that sounds exactly like what I'm trying to do here.
Perfect.
So we, like, attend one of his concerts a little bit, and he's beloved by all of the middle-aged, easy listening crowd. He blows kisses and adjourns back to his mansion, where he begins his next shitty sax composition. Smash cut to Melanie Griffith, who is a tromboner, is what I wrote. She is probably, and I'm reading this verbatim, probably she is like the best tromboner in the world.
May I ask a question?
No, I'm not done. Up all night practicing until her trombone arm is hyperextended, I guess.
Oh. Go, went limp would be the fucking obvious choice, but fine. Yeah.
The spit valve can no longer contain, and it's just spraying everywhere.
Yeah. Anyway, she's in
spit valves. I don't know.
They
how.
Do. They do.
Yeah.
At the end of their long trombone. Anyway, she's in a practice room and starts tromboning down. Anyway, Lee, what are you saying?
I'm watching. No, Lee, don't say it. I'm watching Lee jump out of his skin because he wants to guess what this is happening. Like,
That's not it at all. No, I was going to ask, is tromboner the proper term, or is that just a Simpsons joke?
It's trombonist, I believe.
That's what I assumed. I just didn't know, and I wanted to know.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't really care. I was just trying to give her any kind of instrument.
Yeah, that's fine.
And it's a funny sounding instrument.
Interesting. I thought you were giving her a very specific instrument because I thought we were assembling a certain type of band here, but I could be wrong.
Oh, is it a ska band?
It's like, well, we've got a sax and a guitar and now a trombone. I mean, come on.
That would have been so... And a glockenspiel.
Fourth wave. We could invent fourth wave. Whatever.
You know, if you can, if the E Street Band can have a glockenspiel, a dedicated glockenspiel, like why not? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's glockenspiel is the new skanking. Sure. So, and then we have a four screen split here, and each of the character begins to play the same sort of sequence of notes, and it's, you know, super complicated. I assume, I don't know. Smash cut. To each of our four characters switching places. Wow. And it doesn't really matter who goes where, but I'm sure we can come up with when we actually write this out.
So you mean like now Hugh is conducting the not orchestra and...
Right, but they go into the exact same position that they were like just in. So like Hugh ends up in the office with like the instruments everywhere with a glockenspiel hammer in his hand. And
in their universe, they don't acknowledge it? It just seems natural or whatever? Or
well, everybody is alone when this happens, so there's nobody that does acknowledge it. They just, like, they like, switch places and then are, like, starting to freak out because they end up in a place they were not aware.
It is obvious to them. They're not that just, makes, like, going that, on like nothing
that's much more right. clear. Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Can I really quick tell you that friend of the show, Jer... His mother was a music teacher at one point, and she robbed the school blind of instruments.
I don't believe that for a goddamn second, but I believe the second part. I don't believe the first part.
Robbed the school blind of instruments. One of the things that she brought home at one point was a glockenspiel. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to one day walk over to the glockenspiel, pick up the little mallet thing, and just spontaneously start playing random scales that I didn't even know how to play on guitar, an instrument I had been playing for several years, and I put it down and I've never touched it again. I think I might be a glockenspiel prodigy.
Of those things that has like an open tuning where if you just play it, it sounds like
yeah, I don't know,
like,
yeah.
Oh, all right,
well, I mean, like, you have to do the sequencing right or whatever, but in general,
listen, all I'm saying is, like, you know, some people it's probably some dumb Malcolm Gladwell bullshit where it's like, it's a real tragedy that there's a violin prodigy out there who's never touched a violin, but they're really good at kazoo or some shit like that. And it's like, that's me in the glockenspiel.
I like some dumb Malcolm Gladwell bullshit.
It's because everything he says is dumb bullshit.
That's true.
Did you work only 10,000 hours to get your PhD, either of you? No, it was way more than that.
I would never call myself a master at the thing that I do, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, 100%.
You still worked way more than 10,000 hours.
I guess technically, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Perhaps.
He's a dumb piece of shit, asshole.
Ooh. Yeah, well,
people do feel strongly about him in both directions. Yeah.
He's a real cunt. How about that?
Whoa! Oh, going south of the border. hemisphere.
So they've all switched places and they're freaking out.
Then they're freaking out. And, you know, each character is so confused, but everything in the world seems the same, just like a little off as they start to explore it. We'll do some, like, camera tricks for this, like maybe filters and maybe a couple of, like, very, very slight fish eyes and that sort of stuff. Like, really change our focal lengths around, make it so that things are not quite right, and they mm-hmm. seem more not quite right with the new character in the situation. Right, but you know, it's not that big of a deal. But everybody treats them as if they were the same person that was there before, right? So, like, sure. Hugh is treated as if he were Malcolm.
So they're the only people that know that they've changed, that something's amiss.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Right. And so eventually it dawns on Rachel to go to the physics department of her college because she was, you know, in a shitty college grunge pop punk band called Josie and Nash. The Pussycats.
Mm-hmm.
and we learn from an exhibition character who I've named Professor Exhibition Character. Exposition. Mm-hmm. Exposition Character. So we learn about string theory for a while. And, you know, we're talking about the resonance and the vibrations of the universe, you know, how the universe is composed of fundamental strings. Everything in it is fundamental strings. So each universe has a unique frequency. And you can unlock and even travel between the universes, or at least this is the theory, through determining that particular vibration or sequence of vibrations that matches the other universe.
Very cool.
And, you know, once identified, you can go there if you tune precisely and correctly to the patterns and the tempo of that other universe.
Mm-hmm. So they all happened upon the correct musical tempo. And
very
got
cool.
it.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the movie is sort of following each of these characters who are sort of embodying their counterparts' lives, but, you know, appear to everyone else in the universe as the original person, as I said. Hijinks ensue. You can rest assured.
Naturally. Yeah.
And it also seems like the universes are each starting to sort of collapse in their own ways, and, like, each of them eventually comes around to be like, shit, I need to get back to the other one. There's something so wrong here. I don't know what it is, but something's wrong.
So their presence
is somehow throwing
disrupting
off
the stability of that universe.
The stability of the frequency, the melody, one would say.
It's the, like, entropy argument is, like, if you fuck with it, then it starts spiraling and you can't harness it back in.
Precisely. Yeah. So, Rachel and Professor Exposition Character figure out eventually how to communicate with the other three parallel universes, but are unable to transfer back. They can only communicate. And so, eventually, everybody is, like, as I already said, they're, like, tired. They need to get back to their original universe, and they have a renewed sense of, like, self-worth and a joie de vivre, if you will. Like, they're like, yeah, I do understand because I walked a mile in somebody else's shoes, you know, that sort of thing. So they try to play the same music that got them transferred, like whatever, like, weird melody slash thing. And they just can't seem to get the timing right and everything. And they, like, all are communicating and they're trying to get their timing right across four different universes at the same time. If you've ever been in a band and have even tried to get the sync right between
sitting,
I don't know, like,
right
three
next
people,
to somebody.
Yeah.
Say, let's strip it down even more. If you've ever been in a Zoom and did the
You go.
imagine trying to do that across universes, and, you know, it's always, you know, a little fast, a little slow, and they're getting better, but there's, like, a lot of trial and error.
But they're running out of time, baby.
And every universe is collapsing, you know, a millisecond fast or slow. It's always fucked up somehow, and things are getting desperate. It seems like every string in this universe is going to completely unravel. Mm-hmm. Until finally they're completely in sync and Professor Exposition Character says, yes, that's the tempo, and we smash cut to each of our characters back in the moment when they first sort of shifted, and they sigh and everything's back to normal, and then we see a character begin, like, we see each of them sort of begin to move onward and upwards of their lives. But then in a dark corner of Rachel's room, we see a similar glimmer to the unraveling of the universe, and Professor Exposition Character's face ever so briefly appears. And then we smash cut to a jaunty grunge pop punk song for the credits.
Whew. And a big old question mark.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Seth, two notes. One, Professor Exposition has to be J.K. Simmons, and when he's doing the tempo thing, it's the thing at the end of Whiplash that he does with his hands, the up and down.
That's right.
And two, sometimes on this podcast we come up with, let's say, movies that are movies. Like, you know, whatever.
Movies.
Again, better than a lot of the garbage that Hollywood puts out, but that is a fucking masterpiece.
Yo, I was just, my note at the end was, hey Seth, you're really creative.
That's incredible.
I really appreciate it.
Unbelievable.
Thanks, fellas.
God damn.
The only thing, here's
they can change
also,
whatever. I don't give a shit.
No. My thing is sequel. There's evil versions. The characters start showing up because I want to see what evil Rachel Lee Cook looks like.
Yeah.
I think I might enjoy that.
She's even hotter. Everybody gets it.
I think I might enjoy that.
You and goth Rachel Lee Cook just...
Be still.
Lee told me a real fun real life Rachel Lee Cook story that I hope he relays later.
I mean, I can do it right now.
Yeah, so do it right now.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah.
08 election.
We remember it fondly.
In college, you know,
coming out
I
of
was
the dark
in college
times.
In Philadelphia, and there were get out the vote things happening, registering people on campuses. And rumor had it that there were going to be movie stars on all these different campuses on this particular day. Rachel Lee Cook was signing people up to vote, I think at Penn, which was not where I went to school.
No.
I got the male lead from fucking Sweet Home Alabama.
Diet McConaughey, yeah.
Fake McConaughey, And I've been salty about it ever since.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair thing to be salty about. Yeah.
Lee, as you described it, and then we could have, rode a horse off into the sunset. And I truly think that could have happened.
I don't think that was likely, but as we know,
who's to say?
Seth's movie, all universes are possible. So,
It's true. It's true.
Yoinks.
I could be Mr. Shitty Netflix rom-coms right now. Like
Lee Cook, yeah. Yep.
Or got part of the name.
Lee Cook would be kind of weird.
Oh, man. It's like Lily Sobieski, except
I wouldn't retire from the public spotlight because I feed off of attention.
You adore that thing. Yeah.
Okay, boy. I guess it's time. We've reached the point where we have to talk about the real movie.
We do.
Yep.
It won't take very long.
Are there any tromboners?
No.
Oh.
No. Sadly, no. So there's two IMDb's.
Uh-oh.
One...
Truly, Zach, I think the second IMDb, the longer one, is just going to serve as the plot summary of this movie. Because I don't know what I could add at this point. And I haven't even read it.
We can definitely
just assume.
Do that.
Yeah.
So I'll read the first one. That's the two sentence summary. And then the second one is a paragraph.
Okay.
It is, I'm now seeing on the below the fold part of IMDb, it's by a guy from Brazil, but the translation is so piss poor that it acts as a real fun journey into.
Okay. Yeah.
Why we shouldn't use Google Translate.
Yeah.
I mean, listen. Certain languages, it's totally reasonable.
You could also have a person who speaks Portuguese and also English do the thing, but they didn't do
that,
clearly.
I agree. Like, the translation industry is in flux very much, so as someone who worked in this field for 2 years, specifically, there are certain languages where it don't fucking matter.
Like,
Spanish?
Yeah,
you're good. Like,
For this movie especially, there is absolutely no reason to pay a person to do this thing, clearly. Mm-hmm. Google Translate was the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Now, like, Brazilian Portuguese, I don't know. Like, it's not standardized as much, but, like,
yeah it's a little
written,
more complicated.
It kind of is.
Yeah, sure. That's true. But the spoken
Same with
is,
Spanish.
Is pretty...
The written version is far more standardized. But
Yep. Okay, the two sentence. Allegedly English version is
Please.
Jenny. We start with the character's name. Love it.
Wonderful. My favorite part.
And I didn't know who Jenny was until this next clause.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Right. Jenny, a character who is not in the first third of the movie, so I don't know why we're starting
Sweet.
With her. But Jenny, a young woman, moves to Paris.
Young American woman.
Yes. Oh. And gets involved with Jack, who is seemingly the man of her dreams. Who are these people? Doesn't
this
matter.
Is Rachel Lee Cook and Hugh
Malcolm Benson. McDowell.
It is. Yeah. However, he has a lot to hide, and Jenny quickly gets entangled in his dangerous lifestyle. No mention of Melanie Griffith, the, I would say, main character of this movie.
I would also argue that she's the one with the dangerous lifestyle.
Yeah, for sure.
The entanglement and danger are all circumstantial.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
To the Rachel Lee Cook Hugh Dancy situation.
Yep. Yeah. All right, tell me more about this fucking travesty.
Yeah, Zach, do this longer summary that you said. So the reason I'm saying Zach should read this is Zach brought up when we were talking about how completely forgettable this movie was.
Mm-hmm.
Zach mentioned, I just read the longer one, and now I guess I remember the movie, and I really could use that memory jog, is what I'm getting at.
Okay. It gives more details, but as I mentioned, it is Google translated from Portuguese, so it's one of these things, I'm going to try to read the words as they appear, but my brain is going to want to
Your brain's
going
to try to correct them. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
there's not even like a Wikipedia summary or something?
I'm pretty
sure honestly, the Wikipedia page does not have a summary. It has, I'll read you the
holy
the Wikipedia
shit,
page
it has
right now.
Nothing.
Yeah, it just says premise. The film is set primarily in Paris and concentrates on a love triangle that gets increasingly complicated as criminal enterprises go wrong. That's technically correct.
True, yeah.
Fair. Oh, but it
I
has,
don't know that I would call it a love triangle, though.
It has all these great things on the poster. Desire, seduction, betrayal. Yeah.
They tried.
Game has its rules.
I don't think this one does, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
I mean, it does have its rules of hammering foreshadowing into your face so hard that there's no other possible ending to the movie. Like,
not a lot of nuance in this one, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. In France, Sarah is a courier of illegal pieces of art and antiques, living in a borrowed apartment with Jack, a man younger than she.
So she's a smuggler.
Sarah is Melanie Griffith, and Jack is Hugh Dancy.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
A man younger and younger than she is weirdly a fun way to put that.
Yes, they are clearly together, and she is older than him.
They don't hang a lampshade on it, but they do acknowledge that it's like a weird 20-ish year difference.
Well, the opening scene doesn't make a big deal out of it. It's just that throughout the movie they keep pointing out like, oh, Melanie Griffith's ex-husband who has a whole new family and they have a grown child together,
and Rachel Lee Cook is so much of a better fit because they're both like basically teenagers, like
but like it's the movie keeps pointing out the age difference when the whole establishment of the story doesn't at all. So
what was the translation error here? Is there like some fascinating, like I'm sure that there must be a term for like a younger lover versus
younger than she assumes that one person is standing still and the other one is aging, I think. Like,
if this were translated from French, I would imagine there'd be some confusion in the fact that the woman is older. President Macron is dating his former teacher, or married to, rather.
Ooh,
so.
Very cool.
Oh, you mean that shitty guy who has increased...
Barely beat a fucking literal Nazi in their last general election?
Yeah, uh-huh. And then also has increased the retirement age and has resulted in just like a fuck ton
of
protests.
Yeah. Burning that motherfucker down, I will say that.
You know what I love about France? The fucking firemen.
Mm-hmm.
Who just light fires to keep police away from protesters. Hell yeah, France. Like,
the good guys. Huzzah.
It is really cool, actually. I appreciate it.
The real heroes are the Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, and French Fireman.
Who saw it coming? While Sarah is traveling to Munich to bring a rare coin to the criminal Walter Schranger...
He's a guy that we didn't give you. It doesn't matter. His character is gay, and it seems like he used... Oh, no, wait. That's Malcolm McDowell.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
You know what? It's all fucked.
Everyone's very hypersexual. Well, this guy especially is, like, hypersexual to a just unbelievable degree.
Melanie Griffith...
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just have to. Melanie Griffith usually works for this fence, mm-hmm. who is a overt, like he is.
Yeah. Oh, for Malcolm McDowell. Yeah.
I thought that
no,
was
no,
different. Oh. I thought that was this guy, the Walter Schranger, last name fully included.
Mm. Well, so. Jesus, this fucking movie. Melanie Griffith is no Malcolm McDowell is Schranger.
Okay.
Oh, because
okay. This is the problem with the movie. So
who's
okay.
that?
The problem with the movie.
So there's a. Well, this is the problem with the plot. In the plot, not with. Okay. In. So Melanie Griffith usually works with this guy George.
Okay.
Who is a fence and smuggler, mm-hmm. and he. Seems to maybe used to have been in a relationship with her, but he's also like openly verbally gay.
Okay. Yeah.
And,
sure.
And has kind of he's openly gay, but has like a weird straight cuck fetish kind of like,
yeah, I guess
he likes to like hear about her sexual
young
escapades.
Man who's fucking you. And like,
yeah, it's very bizarre. Yeah.
It's weird. Anyway, she usually works for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the big conflict of the movie is Malcolm McDowell. Walter Schranger says, hey, why do we need him as the middleman? Why don't you just do a thing for me?
Classic crimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
In all of that, Jack meets Jenny Traville, a silly and irresponsible American girl, which translated from any language other than English. Yeah, makes sense. Sure.
Yeah.
She's
an American student who got like expelled from college and is working at a jewelry store.
Yeah.
In France.
And they do
reasons.
Oh, so an incredibly wealthy American who could go to France
and they dumb her up unimaginably. Like her character is so stupid.
She explains why she's not in school anymore. It's like, yeah, me and my friends are computer geniuses and we like broke into the school security system to change our grades. And it's like,
did you?
This didn't pay off at all. Like this didn't inform her character beyond that.
No.
Like
no.
Yeah.
She
doesn't do computers later. Like she's not machines a la Donatello.
I was gonna say a la Donatello.
Yeah. A silly and irresponsible American girl who works a fancy jewelry and they have an affair. Full stop.
So while Melanie Griffith is away doing this smuggle, Hugh Dancy and Rachel Lee Cook start up a relationship.
Right. Well the Griffith is away, the cook will cook.
Well, that's you say that. Maybe. Hugh Dancy's character wants to be a chef.
He does. That's true.
In fact, the opening scene is him making a galette, and Melanie Griffith comes over and says, hey, you should fuck me instead. And he's like, okay. And then they walk away, and there's a very tame sex scene. And then he comes, like, smash cut to there's a finished galette, and I don't know how it got baked, because he didn't put it in the oven. He didn't even finish forming it. That dough is going to get too hot, and it's going to get soft and gooey, and it's not going to bake up.
Predictably, right. This is the thing Lee and I spent the most time talking about.
Oh, no,
sure.
I can't
I was
imagine
very
not,
angry about
yeah.
this.
Not yeah, baking yeah. that galette. Like, the butter is just going to come out of that short crust.
Exactly. It's going to leak all over. You're going to have, it's going to be hard and unpleasant to eat. You're going to lose all the tenderness in the pastry. It's not going to be flaky. That's for goddamn sure.
Like, yeah, without a doubt it's not gonna be flaky. God damn.
It's gonna be
Hugh Dancy.
Based on his disrespect to the dough, I doubt he used anything other than water, so it probably wasn't gonna be tender and flaky anyway.
Oh, what an idiot. Do you think disrespects humans the way he disrespects dough?
Well, a little bit in the movie.
Like, kind of respectful to most of the
It's you know what?
He's
he
not
is
the
pretty
worst.
All well, right. He does sneak around behind Melanie Griffith's back in a way that
does literally cheat on her. That's true. Yeah.
He vocalizes the idea that they had an understanding, but the way he behaves suggests that he knows he's doing something wrong.
And the way she reacts to it is clear that she thought they had a different understanding. I think.
Yeah, and she is very hurt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Moving on. Yes. Jenny falls in love for him and exposes the code and secrets of the store to Jack.
Okay.
Here's
sure.
the thing. Mm-hmm. There's a scene. Literally, the first moment she. So this is good. We're getting through the whole damn movie.
We are. This is fun. Yeah.
This is. Maybe we should do this more often. The first moment.
You mean
she
find
walks,
poorly translated
translate things into Portuguese and then Brazilian Portuguese and then back to English.
I'm just talking about streamlining. We don't have to do short summary, then me talk about movie, and then us give our thoughts. We're just doing short summary and thoughts. With the summary combined.
I think you think this is taking less time, but it's not. And that's fine.
Oh, God, you're right.
It's exactly the same amount of time.
Literally, the moment she walks into this jewelry store, the owner is like, hey, when you close up. Do you see that display in the window full of expensive jewels? Well, check this out. And they go under a counter and type in a code. And it's like, here's a bunch of costume jewelry that looks the same. We switch them out every night because we don't want people to rob us. And if they do, they'll get the shitty stuff. And also, it inspires drunk people to come back in the morning and shop, which is true. This is very true retail thing. Anyway,
yeah.
But like, the moment that happens and the scene feels like it lasts for 25 minutes, you're like, oh, so at the end of the movie, they're going to switch the jewels. Yeah. Like, this is the whole deal.
Also, this is her niece from America. Niece? I think it's her niece. Right?
Are they related? Is that how she gets the job?
Or maybe it's her, like, quote unquote aunt. Like, it's her, like, mother's, like, friend from college or something. You're like, I don't know.
Man, all my mom's friends from college are, well, I grew up with them. So I don't have any fancy ones in France.
But she literally shows up day one, this child, and she's like, here's all the secrets to our, I don't know, millions of dollars worth of jewelry. All right, so you do that then, and we're going to go fuck off for a while.
Seems really dumb.
What could go wrong? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This all seems pretty dumb, I gotta say.
It does. Meanwhile, Sarah is stolen in the train in her travel back to Paris. And
yeah,
has
that sounds
to raise...
right. That sounds right. She's stolen.
She is stolen.
So Melanie Griffith, while she's smuggling for Malcolm McDowell, the guy that she usually smuggles for found out, and he paid people to steal the thing she was smuggling. Also, she bought it off of a old woman who I think is a Holocaust survivor, and and the other guy, the normal fence, has a hitman kill that lady just because.
Yep. She literally says, like, I have to sell this coin that is, like, part of my family legacy from the Holocaust because have to keep living. And they're like, oh, God, this is tragic. And then
and
guy
they have, like,
kills
a moment
her.
Where it's like, we're both women who have, like, tried, who are survivors. And it's like, I'm glad I met you. And then, like, Melanie Griffith walks away, gets on a train, and someone shoots the lady in the head. And then that person robs Melanie Griffith.
Yeah.
Holy
this movie
God.
Does not know what its own tone is at all.
No, it knows exactly what its tone is. It's just not good at it.
Holy
I guess.
Shit.
Sarah is stolen in the train in her travel back to Paris and has to raise $80,000 in two days to pay for the lost.
So the guy that she usually fences for is like, hey, guess what? I did this thing. So get Malcolm McDowell to pay me for it. And she's like, well, Malcolm McDowell's not going to do that. He goes, well, I guess you have to. And she's like, I guess I have to.
Okay, just two more sentences to take us to the end. She convinces Jack to rob the jewelry with her to raise the money. However, things do not happen how planned.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Who bet on Rachel Lee Cook susses out the plan and doesn't switch the jewelry one night? Because that's what happens, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then Hugh Dancy and Melanie Griffith take the fake jewelry to a rendezvous point, and they get killed, right? Is that the end of the movie? They get killed? Yeah.
Everybody gets killed at the end, yeah.
Honestly, at the end, I started doing the dishes and stopped paying attention. A bunch of cops die in a car crash, a car chase at one point.
That's
Rachel
no problem.
Cook faces no repercussions, which, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but she gets the millions of dollars of jewelry, or what?
No, the jewelry's just in the jewelry store.
She gets away without having been exposed, essentially.
Yeah,
so she
yeah.
fucks over literally everyone else in the...
Her family, her new lover, Melanie Griffith, everybody.
Death of... Well, cause it. She contributes to the death of multiple people because she feels... betrayed for being cheated or
for being
the
other woman, right,
her lover not being
completely faithful.
The shooting scene is fucking bizarre, though. Like, same with the woman from the Holocaust, where they don't show the actual violence. They show a blood splatter hitting like a glass pane on a door or whatever. At the end, it's Malcolm McDowell in the backseat of like a luxury car. And then the big shootout between Melanie Griffith, Hugh Dancy, bunch of hitmen, like all the goons and whatever. And there's just a bunch of like implied gunshots. And then like Malcolm McDowell just does like the knowing nod. And then the window rolls up and they kind of roll away. And that's it.
Yeah, this was like, this was like 2 days for Malcolm McDowell. It's one day in an apartment and one day in a car. Honestly, they probably could have done it at the same day. So.
Yeah.
Why? Is it called Tempo?
I don't know.
Truly, I don't know. No idea.
There's no obvious reason for me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I put at the top. I usually at the top of my text file for every episode, I put the title of the movie, the money, and then whatever else is like, you know, the numbers, the short stuff. And I said, tempo, colon, no money, no trivia, barely any movie. There's nothing. Absolutely. This movie barely exists.
Yeah.
So I was struggling to find things to bring up. I do want to point out before I forget, one of the three screenwriters, God knows why there were three, L.M. Kit Carson. That's Kit Carson, of course, a famous Western figure. So I'm assuming that's why their writer guild name includes. Anyway, L.M. Kit Carson actually like has at least two really famous writing credits. They wrote Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which people love.
Yep.
It's the kind of parody sequel of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
But like, is and they good. Wrote, people do like it. Yeah.
Yeah. And they fucking wrote the Wim Wenders fucking one of the maybe top 50 movies of all time, Paris, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And then they wrote this.
Yeah.
They fucking wrote this.
Paris, Texas was like the 80s, though, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is 25 years
later. I get it. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
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 Paris, Texas is very good.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I haven't seen it. I know about it. Yeah.
This seems like a nothing movie.
It is.
It is. It doesn't exist.
Same with... So, Lee and I were talking about this. Like, Hugh Dancy is on the upswing of his career. Rachel Lee Cook is in the weird middle of her career, where she's not quite like She's All That anymore.
Teen roles.
This is 2003. Was she married to Antonio Banderas at this point? Or was
Melanie?
She still
yeah, I
married
think
she, to...
Melanie was.
I think Melanie and Antonio were married at this point.
Don Johnson.
Melanie's like saddest version, because she is in that thing that like female actors talk about all the time, where they're like, once you turn a certain age, Hollywood says, fuck off, we have no use for you anymore, because you're not like hot,
sucks.
Quote unquote.
That's
or
so
whatever.
Stupid.
And this does feel like one of those. She's like, I just want to work. Like, I want to do the thing. And
well,
I'll
one
do
of the,
whatever.
One of the things that kind of bums me out about Melanie Griffith is I feel like that hit. Yeah. So her and Antonio Banderas got married in 1996. So they were definitely together at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Before, one of the things that makes me sad about Melanie Griffith is she like very publicly started getting plastic surgery in the early 90s. And this is the point where you can tell she was, there's a very real thing. I this is all speculation. I don't know if this is the case with her. People start to, for lack of a better word, become addicted to it. Like literally, I had a professor who wrote the literal book about it because it was her experience.
Well, because it's like an ego vanity thing, and you're chasing some dragon. It's like any addiction. You're chasing a thing that you can never actually attain, right?
This is at the point, like Zach's saying, where like her career is on the slowing down, and it's very clear that she is starting to get more and more work
It's
done.
Fucking even weirder because they cast her as the obviously older love interest to this very young actor. Like, she's the literal older woman in this thing. Like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. That must have been fucking bizarre in her shoes.
That
can't
seems
even imagine.
Really kind of cruel.
I don't know that it was intended to be, but like in hindsight, it doesn't seem.
I mean,
great.
Like perhaps not. You have to assume that she accepted the role. I don't know what the situation is.
Sure,
all I'm saying
sure,
is
sure,
like
sure,
this
sure.
is this is clearly a transition point in her career in many ways, like in terms of appearance and star power. Like it's
and I don't think she did much after this. Like she kind of like hung it up then. Some point, which I think was fairly shortly after this.
Let's see, 2000 between 2003 and 2007 and 2000 I'm sorry between 2003 and 2010, at least according to Wikipedia, she does not have any film roles.
Sure.
Yeah, she
and
does.
Even then, it's a lot of voice work.
Yeah, I was gonna say a lot of voice work thereafter.
She's only now, like in the last few years, starting to do
Well, it's that
again.
It's that weird period where you don't really know what you are, and I guess Hollywood certainly doesn't know how to cast people or women, especially of that age. And it's just like I don't blame her for just being like, nah, I don't want to. Like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
If it was because she didn't want to do it anymore because the roles weren't there, like,
sure.
I hope that she felt good about being able to make the decision.
Also, her daughter is extremely famous. I could imagine just being like, oh, I want to try to push her in the right directions, right, like foster like, her career.
That's true. Zach, you and I have gotten very drunk on this show and been weird about how attractive we find Dakota Johnson. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. She has that, like, allure about her. I don't know.
Interesting.
I was giving us an opening to not be that way again.
It's like Cha-Cha Real Smooth is like my perfect example of that, where every time she has a chance to say a thing, she doesn't, and I go, ooh, what is that about? It's just that, like, I don't know.
I want to know what you were gonna say.
Speaking of that, I noted one of the only notes I have for this is Hugh and Rachel are like the two fucking hottest people in their hottest prime in this. This movie is wasted on them entirely. Oh, Hugh is a fucking dime in this.
They both look incredible,
and this movie is garbage.
This movie is garbage. My opinion of Hugh Dancy.
Well, he attended the boarding school at the Dragon School at Oxford. So that's what I learned.
So you know he fucks.
Yep. This is like the most boyish I've ever seen Hugh Dancy, which makes sense because this is the youngest I've ever seen
him. And also it suits him in this role because he doesn't know what he's doing and he's sort of falling for all the obvious pitfalls.
And he's got that like 90s underwear model like physique going on where he's like both waifish and muscular at the same time. Yeah, you know what
you're saying. Lee, you did describe the very early on sex scene between him and Melanie as like the most disappointing and boring sex scene I've ever seen. Fully agreed. They could have done so much with that and they did nothing. Also, along the same lines, I the one other thing that I was thinking is like weird age disparate love triangle can be interesting. Like there's something again, there.
It can
this
be.
Movie didn't and do it, anything with it, but like that could
and
be
I
interesting.
Again, would like to point out that it is very much not a love triangle. It is like there is no rivalry between the two women.
They barely know
like
each
the
other.
Women never interact. Right.
They interact like once, and it's Melanie Griffith comes home, Rachel Lee Cook is there, and Rachel Lee Cook is, oh, well, fuck this, and then leaves.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
It.
Well.
And that is sort of the main like plot hinge of the entire storyline.
Yeah, so he's like, because Melanie Griffith is in trouble with this fence, and she's like, okay, well, Hugh Dancy, like, oh god, he's like, I don't even know how to say.
you guys are really getting deep into the thing. I think
in the weeds. I know.
I get it.
But like,
his thing
is like, I can't watch you. You've done so much for me, and you truly are important to me. I can't watch you like die because of this shit.
Yeah.
Here's this thing I know about the jewelry store, and then she's like, okay, good. Here's the plan, and then me and you run off together. And then he's like, maybe I don't run off with you and stay with other person. Like, that's the extent of love triangleness. Yeah. And then she's all like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I'm sad about it, but like, sure,
life goes on.
Yeah, like a mature
Seth,
adult.
Her character is very like self-sacrificing. Mm-hmm. It turns out. Yeah.
Seth, you're saying you get it, and you're clearly wanting us to move on. But this is you're watching. Yeah. You're watching two people be so frustrated with how little this movie had to offer. We're trying to make any part of it make sense, and it just fucking doesn't.
Okay.
Like, it's
well,
so dumb.
It sounds like a trash pile.
It was nothing. Disappointing.
All right. On that note, let's do the rates.
Yeah.
Unsurprising in any way, with 1,100 votes, this movie has a 4.6.
Mm-hmm.
Seems high.
Yeah.
Kind of does.
Yeah, I'll go original. Mm-hmm. It was bad. I hated it.
Yep.
I've said this on this podcast before. I'll say it again. Big old Rachel Lee Cook crush. So I enjoyed...
Especially the alt-goth version.
Yeah, the hypothetical.
Josie and the Pussycats is about as close as you can get in contemporary media. Yeah.
Well,
she's like emo Rachel Lee Cook. It's like
I'd give this movie like a 0.5. I'll give it a 0.75 because there is like a love scene with Rachel Lee Cook. Like we don't see anything, but like I enjoy just the idea of that.
Yeah. So 0.75. Yeah.
0.75. Give it a 0.8 because there's a whole Hugh Dancy smash cut to Hugh Dancy's butt while he's taking a shower.
Oh, that is cool.
You know, I love a smash cut.
Hugh Dancy's butt was the only nudity we got in this entire movie that intended to be very sexy.
Melanie Griffith was wearing some sheer lingerie at one point.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mustn't forget.
Well, I only remember Hugh Dancy's butts.
Mm-hmm. It's because it was a really jarring smash cut.
It was. Yeah, yeah it was.
So yeah, that's what I'm going to say. Yep. Seth, yep. Your movie. Great. It was smart. It was creative. Much like the current Best Picture reigning movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once, it was very complicated in a way that would also be very affordable to make.
Mm-hmm.
And the revelation of the potential sequel with Goth Rachel Lee Cook is going to get you an extra point.
Oh, so that hell yeah.
To a 10.
Hell yeah.
You were talking about sequel earlier. This seems... It's almost too perfect. Like, why mar it with a sequel?
I because I need my screenshots.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I mean, yeah. I didn't need to have a sequel, but I thought that it he would left, be a fun little
Seth
wink.
Truly left the door open. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even force it's that so upon perfect. It.
Also, Lee...
He left the...
AIs are getting really good. It just, if you need
no,
that...
No, it's not... Zach, it's not real.
They're okay, also okay. Not getting that good, but that's fine. Yeah.
No, they're getting good in some cases, like writing English essays and faking nude pictures of people.
No, they're not getting good at writing English essays. They're getting good at writing 5-paragraph high school
right.
essays. There's a very big difference.
English, trash. Parentheses, high school. Yes.
Trash.
Yes.
Yeah. They're good at writing trash.
They're good at writing form letters.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Original, it's like a 1. It's like nothing. Oh. It sucked so bad.
Now, is that incorporating Hugh Dancy butt smash cut?
Yeah.
It's only incorporating Hugh Dancy butt smash cut. Yeah. The only redeeming feature of this
movie. Wow, I gave it a 0.05 worth of bump up, and you gave it a whole 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Seth, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, just top to bottom, Lee was saying, like, it is, like... You did the complicated thing, but you made it very simple. Like, that's the best version of complicated, is the mechanism isn't weird. Like, it's not fucking Tenet. Like, you're not leaving the theater going, like, what happened there? You're just like, oh, I fully understand it, and I'm here for it.
You know, now that you say that, it is truly the exact opposite of this real movie.
Sure.
Seth made complicated simple. This movie made simple complicated.
Yes, like the worst of all options. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Seth, your thing was, it's exactly... the thing that you want out of that like weird kind of movie, the mechanism wasn't hard. The whole thing makes sense. And then even the struggle back to it, like you kind of think, you know, where it's going to end. But even when you get there, you're like, perfect. Like I wanted that thing and it happened and it's great. Yeah. So I can't give you an 11, but I'm going to give you a 10 and then I'm going to bump this real movie down to a 0 just so it feels like an 11.
So I get infinite?
Yeah. Yeah, your delta is technically infinite on that one. Or undefined. Probably undefined.
Mm. Undefined. Yeah. No. Yeah. I struggled with writing this one a little bit.
Well, you wouldn't know it.
No, but I knew what I wanted to do, but it took me some time to like figure it out, and I don't think I quite got there, but like,
sure,
man, I actually
for a goddamn first draft, Seth.
I actually I really like this premise. I like because you incorporate that physics bit, and
but again, it's accessible. Like, you don't need to fucking know the fucking temporal pincher move or whatever bullshit. Like, it just
temporal
makes sense.
Pincer
like,
movement. Yeah.
You can literally do your thing with visuals only. You don't have to have exposition. Like, you can just show it and hear it, and you go, oh, I see what they're okay. Yeah.
Hey, Hollywood.
Oh, okay. I thought for a second you were like fading into Shutter Island territory where we get a reveal that's a whiteboard of how everyone's name is.
Nah. Hey, Hollywood.
Yeah, goddamn. Like, seriously. It's so good. Truly.
I mean, the Writers Guild's about to go on strike. Like, I don't know that this is even a very viable job for people.
I don't know why, but
industry.
I'm going to assume good for them, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I hope.
Usually good for them.
I hope it turns out good for them. It's just, it's so disheartening that every major Writers Guild strike that has happened since the 80s has been because of studios attempting to take advantage of writers in very specific ways based on changes in the medium.
Yeah.
And like,
Oh, so like this is like a, we went to streaming and then
Well, no, the streaming one was like twelve years ago. Was the big streaming?
Oh, okay, yeah. I remember that
streaming
one.
Shift yeah. one. Yeah, mm-hmm. This one is we're on streaming, so now we can just like we don't need a writer's room. We need this, or we don't. We'll just take a thing off of streaming. Since like it's they're fighting for minimum requirements for royalties.
Oh, we talked about this recently, where that like people are like, why does Netflix take shit off that has just barely
so
been
they
on?
They don't have to pay the writers.
And it's, they don't have to do the back end royalty stuff. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sucks. Yeah,
and apparently writer's rooms have been like cut down from like 20 people to 5 people in some cases. And sure. It's like, no, just do it. No, wait, that's not how labor
are you
works.
Saying
like
is this why we're inundated with very mediocre TV streaming shows? Because mm-hmm. like god damn mm-hmm. yeah,
and probably
in
why
general yeah
why every streaming series is 2 episodes too long is because there's such a small room that they can't cut out the things that should be cut out or yep. like we need to stretch this to save ourselves extra time to finish our job like
yeah or yeah. we need to stretch this because we need to make any money on it like
yeah, right to survive yeah. for until we get picked up again yeah
mm-hmm. yeah
anyway you know Feige stands with the WGA obviously
absolutely
unionize everything and also that yes woof
burned it all down anyway all right.
next week Lee.
That's a good option
French firemen next week,
little Seth Rollins.
Lee, Lee is doing.
That's for friend of the show, Kev. He'll understand that one, maybe.
Next week, Lee is doing a movie called The Drop.
The Drop.
Oh,
yeah.
Maybe you can just call me the shoe because I'm about to the drop.
What?
Other one?
No, the
other
drop shoe. The other shoe.
The other all shoe. Right. Yeah.
You should have said your name cool. was the other shoe.
Yeah, you're right. I should have. And this is why we need more robust writers' rooms who are getting paid livable wages because you need to bounce these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, right?
This
like,
is what we do
joke.
Every goddamn week. We do it's this a, with each other.
Yeah, it's a good joke. It just needs a little bouncing.
A little workshopping.
It's a little TLC, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Couple waterfalls, man. I'm not trying to catch them all, just one.